couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. We have a huge show, a big transforming show. We actually have so much stuff in this show, I don't even know if I'm going to have time to talk about it. We've got five movies on the list. The first one, of course, is the big one, Transformers Age of Extinction. We're going to have a review of that one. But there's also some smaller releases in limited release. You've got They Came Together, The Internet's Own Boy, plus some on-demand and very limited theatrical releases with Radio Free Albemuth and Cabin Fever Patient Zero. So we've got a grab bag of a whole bunch of different things. We're also going to be talking about news. We got an interview with Gillian Murphy from Cabin Fever Patient Zero. We've got a DVD giveaway, so it'll be your chance to get a free DVD. And you know, free is always nice, whether even if you don't like the movie, it's a free DVD. We have some listener feedback, and then there's going to be box office prediction and the DVD roundup. So let's talk about how to get a hold of me. And before we move on, if you want to email me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456, or you can find me on the interwebs at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. If you want to reach out to me on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr. I'm usually there, you know, just farting around on the internet. That's what we do. That's what it's made for. That's what Twitter's for.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's stop farting around with that and start farting around with the news. We've got a bit of a sad piece of news. We have a death in the cinema family, Eli Wallach. And most people may not remember who he is because he's been around for so long. He was 98 when he passed away, which is kind of amazing. And I remember he was in a movie, he was in the movie The Holiday just, it was probably about 10 years ago now, with Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet and Jack Black. And that was, so he was well into his 80s making movies. He's best known for playing the ugly in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So he's going to be missed. I mean, he was a great actor. He had such a huge career. He died earlier this week. So that is a bit of sad news. But let's move on to a slightly happier piece of news. Actually, a very happy piece of news for me. Pacific Rim 2 is actually going to happen, which is awesome. And I find it ironic that I'm talking about this on the weekend Transformers comes out, because there's a huge difference, in my opinion, between Pacific Rim and Transformers in terms of quality and overall scope and focus of the picture. I like Pacific Rim so much better than any of the Transformers movies. So Pacific Rim 2 is going to have Guillermo del Toro come back to direct, but it's jumping from Warner Brothers to Universal. And sometimes that's a bit odd to jump studios like that, but we've seen it happen in the past. Kick-Ass, when that, for the first one came out, I believe that was done by Lionsgate, and then it moved to Focus Features. This one is not the first time that Guillermo del Toro has jumped ship for Universal. He did that with Hellboy. I believe Hellboy was, the first one was produced by Sony, and the second one was by Universal. I'm looking forward to Pacific Rim 2. It comes out April 2017, so it's going to be a couple years before that happens. And they're also putting an animated series into development. But I think that's just a wonderful thing that he's coming back, because it's such a fun movie and the right way to do a kaiju movie. Another piece of news is Snow White and the Huntsman is getting a spinoff without Snow White, otherwise Kristen Stewart. But it will be about the Huntsman, played by, of course, Chris Hemsworth. It's going to be directed by Frank Darabont, who is, of course, best known now for creating the TV series The Walking Dead. I know he didn't create The Walking Dead. It's a comic first, but he created the TV series. Frank Darabont, I think, is a fantastic director. I think it's neat for him to step away from the horror genre, step away from Stephen King and zombie things. I mean, even though Stephen King didn't do The Walking Dead, it's nice to see him step away and do something a little bit different. In reboot news, we've got Shane Black, director of Iron Man 3, is going to be rebooting Predator, which I think is a great idea, actually, because he was in the original Predator. And I think he's a fun director. I think he's a good sort of mass market fast food director, which is kind of what you need for Predator. And if they don't have his girlfriend joke in there, the terrorists have won, because that's a great joke that he delivers in the first movie. I can't actually repeat it on the radio, but I hope it becomes a staple of the new film. Also in remake news, War Games finally has a writer and director that probably no one's ever heard of. It's Dean Israelite, and I'm not even terribly familiar with him. But they're going to, of course, remake War Games, which is a totally different world now than it was back then. I'm sure that it's going to be overblown. My big question is, when they find a star, are they going to look for somebody who's actually already killed somebody, or going to let him kill somebody after he becomes famous? Which is kind of what Matthew Broderick did. Look it up on the internet. Matthew Broderick's responsible for the death of at least one person in Ireland when he was famous. And just, it's like, oh, I forgot what happened and kind of got away with it. It's kind of depressing. The last piece of news I just want to hit is there has been a writer swap. They're still knocking around the idea of doing a Karate Kid sequel with Jaden Smith. And I, please God, let this happen. And it's, and here's why. I want it to happen, and I want them to fund it with $150 million. Because I want Jaden Smith to finally crash and burn for good. Because he was cute in The Karate Kid. His cuteness overcame his punk style. But I don't think he has what it takes to actually be endearing in a new movie. Before we move on to the trailer park, we got a little bit of listener feedback. This is kind of a follow-up from last week when I was talking about the Justice League schedule and the DC schedule. So this question comes from our good friend Thomas from Seattle.
Hey, Kevin, this is Thomas from Seattle. Anyway, I was wondering if you like the approach DC is taking with the order of their movies. So maybe in 2018 or 2019, there could be a standalone Superman movie. Does that seem like it's too far attenuated from the movie from last year? That's like, that would be at least 5 or 6 years between standalone Superman movies, and it didn't seem like the character was all that well established or well liked based on last year's movie. So I'm just wondering what your opinion is on this.
Absolutely. It is way too long between standalone Man of Steel or Superman sequels. Even though Superman's going to be in Superman versus Batman, he's sharing the screen. And this is part of my problem with what they're doing is they're rushing everything. And even if you look at how Marvel did it, Marvel had Iron Man come out in 2008 and then 2010, and they rushed it. They did, but they got a second Iron Man movie in 2010, and then they got another one in 2013. They didn't go more than 3 years without an Iron Man movie. And then you had Avengers, which was kind of like Iron Man 2.5. Well, even though you've got Batman versus Superman coming out in 2 years, that'll be 3 years after the last one came out. And then two more, you got 5 years between Superman movies because Man of Steel 2 is May of 2018, allegedly. And I don't think they've established and built him up enough. They're still rushing it. And I mean, it could pay off. It could work. But I think this is a recipe for disaster because he's our anchor character, him and Batman. And then my question is, where's a Batman movie come in on all this? Because not only are you going to have forever between Superman movies, you're going to have the last Batman movie we got was in 2012. We're already 2 years out from that. So yeah, absolutely, Thomas from Seattle. This is, they're trying to do way too much, way too fast, and it could completely implode on them. With that sound, it's time to move on into the trailer park. There's actually a piece of the trailer I wanted to play, dovetails in from the news section. I know Mockingjay trailer dropped this week, and we have TMNT, The Nostrils, out there again. I don't want to talk about those. I want to talk about The Interview, which stars Seth Rogen and James Franco.
You are entering into the most dangerous country on Earth. Kim Jong-un's people believe anything he tells them, including that he can speak to dolphins or he doesn't urinate and defecate.
Whoa. You're telling me my man doesn't pee or poo?
Everybody pees and poos. Where would he go otherwise? He'd explode.
But he does talk to dolphins. You want to go kill Kim Jong-un?
Totally. I'd love to assassinate Kim Jong-un. It's a date.
It's obviously about the assassination of Kim Jong-un. And it comes out October 10th. What's so interesting about this is it looks like it's a funny movie. It looks like it's a wacky, silly James Franco, Seth Rogen type of movie. Here's what's kind of amazing about it. Kim Jong-un has come out and denounced the trailer. And we all know Kim Jong-il was a huge movie fan, but apparently so is his son. And he's called it an act of war. Now, there's some people who are freaking out about it. I think this guy's a lot of bluster. I really don't think we need to worry about North Korea nuking America over a movie, over a movie at all. I think this is just him being nutso and crazy because that's kind of the way of the world over in North Korea. But it's kind of amazing. And also what's amazing is Kim Jong-un has been curiously silent about Adam Sandler. I mean, granted, he's not the quote-unquote target in his movies, but if you really want to talk act of war, Jack and Jill, Grown Ups 2, these were acts of war. They're terrible. This is actually going to play really well for Seth Rogen and James Franco, as long as people don't freak out about it like they did with Comedy Central, where they wouldn't let them air an episode that deals with how you can't say Muhammad and show Muhammad's face. Comedy Central buckled like a belt. As long as the studio stands behind Rogen and Franco, I think this will be good. And also, Rogen and Franco should know they should not be traveling anywhere near Korea anytime soon. With that, I need to go to a break. We're going to be coming back. I'm going to be talking about The Internet's Own Boy and Radio Free Album Month. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move into the movie reviews because we have five of them to do today. The first one I want to hit is The Internet's Own Boy. The life and impact of Reddit co-founder Aaron Swartz is examined in this touching documentary.
A co-founder of the social news and entertainment website Reddit has been found dead.
He certainly was a prodigy, although he never kind of thought of himself like that.
He really had different aspirations for the purposes of political goals.
He was sort of learning to hack politics.
This bill poses a serious threat for all who use the internet.
The freedoms our country had been built on would be suddenly deleted.
He was the internet's own boy, and the old world killed him.
I am not exactly up on tech news. I probably should be a little more, simply because this is the kind of world we live in. Confession, I have never been on Reddit that I know of. I've never gone to Reddit. And I take that back. There have been a couple times where I've clicked on a link from somebody's posted and taken me to Reddit. And I can't, maybe I'm old. I'm 42. So maybe it's because I look at this stuff and it's just a bunch of numbers and letters and it just doesn't make sense to me. I know Reddit is the big thing now, but I'm not up on that. And I've lived this long without Reddit. And I'm sure if I ever did an Ask Me Anything, if I ever got to that point, I'd be on Reddit. But I don't follow the tech news enough to really know what Aaron Swartz's impact was. And so it gave me a unique perspective when I watched this movie, because it profiles this guy who's basically, he was a genius when it came to coding and understanding technology and understanding the internet. But of course, with that much intelligence and that much ability, you can really get in a lot of trouble. And that's exactly what he did. This movie does a decent job setting up what happened to Swartz, how he got in trouble. The basic story is he believed that what's public domain should be publicly accessible. And it's really not. There's a lot of scholarly journals and legal documents that you actually have to pay confiscatory rates to have access to just because somebody stockpiles them. So he was hacking a database, and hacking is a strong word because people hear hack and they're like, oh my gosh, he's a criminal. But no, he was hacking a database and downloading multiple scholarly journals. Nobody knew what he was doing it for, but that violates an archaic cybercrimes law from the 80s. And that's what kind of got him in the crosshairs. This is definitely a movie that's approaching the story from a very specific point of view. And that used to be a no-no when it came to documentaries. But in a post-Michael Moore world, once Roger Me came out, which was very, very much politicizing the documentary and very much removing the sort of veil of objectivism, it's not uncommon for documentaries today to come with a very specific position and angle. And this is all told from a very sympathetic view to Swartz. It does not get the perspective of the people who prosecuted him. Doesn't give the perspective of the people who believed he was doing the wrong thing at times. I'm not saying he was. I'm just saying that it does come with a very specific angle, and at least it's not hiding that, and that's fine. Although I, as I'm reading between the lines of what's going on in the movie, I can say, well, there's always another side, and maybe his involvement in certain things tipped off red flags that aren't really being covered in the movie. But still, what it does is it shows how one person can have that impact. And it does, for good or for bad. For good, because Swartz was instrumental in helping defeat SOPA and PIPA, which were the incredibly overreaching and dangerous anti-piracy laws that were around a couple years ago. And this is not a argument for piracy, but when it comes to laws, regardless of what you're regulating, whether you're regulating internet content or whether you're regulating unions or whether you're regulating gun control or anything, they need to be well-written laws. And if they're poorly written, or they're written in such a way to do something very narrow and could be misinterpreted, or if they cover things they're not intended to cover, it's a bad law. I'm not against laws. I'm against bad laws. I don't care what the purpose of the law is. The purpose of the law may be the most noble cause in the world, but bad laws that are poorly written and overregulated and not understanding what they're actually regulating are terrible things. And that's what SOPA was. And he helped defeat that. But there's sort of a darker angle to him, because he was sort of operating outside the law. And was he going to download this stuff? What was he going to do with it? Was he going to redistribute it? Was he going to sell it? There was questions of intent. And like I said, there's a lot of stuff that's not shown. But it is a sad story, and it's an educational film in the sense that it will open your eyes to how the internet works, if you don't know, because there's a lot of people who don't, and it also shows what people do when their back's up against the wall. So ultimately, I'm going to say The Internet's Own Boy kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next movie I'm going to be talking about is Radio Free Albemuth, Philip K. Dick's self-examining novel about a man who believes he's receiving signals from an alien entity is brought to the screen.
I've had the strangest feeling. I've been asleep my whole life waiting for something to happen.
Maybe they're just ordinary dreams.
I think I'm being programmed in my sleep.
Just because I write science fiction doesn't mean I believe in this stuff.
The Cold War may be over. The secret organization Aramchek is still committed to undermining our democratic institutions.
Life on this planet came from a star system called Albemuth. This is the satellite that serves as our link back. But this invasion is for our benefit, Nick. You and I and the others were chosen.
I have not read much Philip K. Dick. I've seen the movies that his stuff's based on, Blade Runner and Minority Report and Total Recall, The Adjustment Bureau. But with the exception of maybe, well, even Blade Runner. Blade Runner has very little in common with Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is what the original short story or novella was. I've never read much of Dick's work, but I'm familiar with his cinema work. And not that he did any of it, those were the adaptations. But I know he's got huge fans out there, and I kind of blow hot and cold on some of his stuff. Like, I thought Scanner Darkly, which I understand was pretty close to his intended story, those don't really jazz me. I find those kind of boring. But obviously I love Total Recall, which is a huge step away from We Could Remember It For You Wholesale, which is what that original story is based on. Anyways, Radio Free Albemuth is a very small budgeted film, and it suffers a bit from production value issues. I believe it's shot on video, digital video, but it still has a bit of a video quality to it, and which you should be able to overcome in 2014. I understand back in, 2002 when we were making films with video cameras and you didn't have the Red or something like that, you could run into that, but you should be past that today. It also deals with a totalitarian system that is conceived in the 70s, so it doesn't quite fit in modern age. While there's a lot of parallels to do, there's certain elements to it that are missing that it probably would have been just better to have it take place in the 70s. That would have made it a little bit more realistic. But it examines some interesting concepts. I understand it's loosely based on the book. I never read the book, which I believe was published posthumously. I don't know. I'm a little cold on this movie simply because I didn't think the acting was that good. And it really, really suffered from maybe being overly ambitious for its budget. You can have a small budget and be ambitious, but you got to be able to achieve a lot with a small budget. This feels like it's a much smaller production than it really is, because it has some names to it. It has Catherine Winnicks in it, and it has Alanis Morissette in it. I mean, these are not insignificant pop culture people. These are people that actually have careers, and it just feels at times a little cheap, which is depressing, because I always love a good, solid science fiction effort. But hey, if you want to see something for the alternative, if you're a fan of Philip K. Dick, you want to see how this this evolved, check it out. It is on video on demand, so you can get it online without going to a theater. Anyways, Radio Free Albemuth kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. When I return, we're going to be talking about Transformers, Age of Extinction, and They Came Together. Kevin Carr here with Fat Guys of the Movies. Coming back at you, we've covered the smaller films, the really small films. Let's do the huge film. Let's do the so big it can't fail film. I don't know if that's true. We'll see come the end of the weekend how big and can't failable this movie is. I am, of course, talking about Transformers Age of Extinction. After the Battle of Chicago, the government is hunting down the Autobots with the help of alien robots and developing Transformers of their own. Why? I really don't know.
Dad, you can't keep spending money on junk.
I don't think it's a truck at all. I think we just found a Transformer.
I'm gonna ask you this once.
Where is Optimus Prime?
After all we have done, humans are hunting us. But I fear we are all targets now. This is not war. It's human extinction.
You know, I joke about the fact I don't know what's going on in the plot, but honestly, there's a lot of things in this movie that make no freaking sense. Yeah, they've got these alien robots coming to help the U.S. government, who's tracking down the Autobots and relentlessly tracking them down to melt them down into this material that they can then make their own versions of Transformers for. And they have large speeches making nonsense. And like, there's a scene, Stanley Tucci plays one of the scientists who develops these sort of built-at-home Transformers that for some reason don't work and are never road tested before they decide to start killing people. This was his speech. He goes, "Algorithms, math." That is scientific mumbo jumbo in this movie. It is the mumboist jumboist scientific mumbo jumbo you'll ever see. It makes the explanation of warp drives and transporters in Star Trek sound like you're taking a college level course. This movie is incoherent. It is also, in general, poorly acted. Although I will say, you know, they brought in Mark Wahlberg and they got rid of Shia LaBeouf, which is a good thing because Shia LaBeouf's in jail this weekend. I will say I like Mark Wahlberg, and I think he's got really good chemistry, I guess is the best thing to say, when he works well with a director. He did Pain and Gain with Michael Bay last year, and Pain and Gain was okay, but it was not this brilliant character study that I think Michael Bay thought he was making. He makes less of a character study with this movie, which wouldn't be a problem if the movie didn't run 2 hours and 40 minutes long. Here's the reason why a movie should go more than an hour 45 minutes. If it is really tackling something new that takes a long time to digest for the audience, sure, you can do that. If it is a thinking piece that has a lot that they're throwing at you and they've got deep character issues, or if it's like dealing with heavy issues or topics, like when Steven Spielberg's Lincoln was over 2 hours, that made sense because it was dealing with complex political things of the day and they had to work through it and it was a slow pace. This movie has no reason to be this long. And that's, I think, what bothers me about it. And I think this is going to be the Achilles heel in this Transformers series if Michael Bay keeps making them, which I think he's just going to, because there are a few directors out there who are just happy to do only one thing forever. Even George Lucas got tired of doing Star Wars movies. The Spider-Man franchise, they had Sam Raimi. He did 3 in a row and it burned him out. And yeah, Michael Bay did Pain and Gain, but the point is he hasn't been making Transformers. That's all he's been doing for 10 years. And I think that he's okay with that because he doesn't care about character and he doesn't care about dialogue or characterization or even having the script make sense. There are serious problems with this movie. Length, character study, the just terrible dialogue, sometimes some pretty awful acting, nonsensical camera setups. Like, for example, Mark Wahlberg, he plays the dad of the girl. She's the sexy flavor of the month. And, of course, he's all worried about her, looking too sexy. He doesn't want her wearing the short shorts. And the girl who plays her is, like, 18 years old at the time. And so here's pervy old Michael Bay, who's, 50 years old? I mean, he's just making love to this girl with a camera. At the same time, at one side of his mouth is talking, kind of like scolding an audience for liking all these sexy shots and her in the short shorts, and that's all she wears. There's no depth whatsoever, and there's a scene where she's having a father-son moment, and they've got the sun setting behind him. It's almost the same kind of setup they had for the scene in Armageddon when they're on the hill with Ben Affleck and Liv Tyler on the hill and with the animal crackers, but it's father and daughter. I mean, it's shot like a romance thing. It's shot like they're in love and like romantic love and all those elements are there. They're not. It's father and daughter. Yet for some reason, Michael Bay is so devoid of ideas that that's how he has to shoot it. He has no idea what it's like to shoot non-dripping with sex scenes. And that's, I think, a problem. It's one thing for when he did Armageddon in 1998. So he was in his 30s? maybe in her earlier 40s. And it was Liv Tyler, and she was in her 20s. I mean, this girl is barely legal when he's shooting her. And he's shooting, the camera is almost up her shorts. So there's serious problems with the movie. But no one ever sees a Transformer movie for depth and plot and character and development. They see it for giant explosions and robots blowing things up, and that's what you get. So in a weird way, it delivers. And I saw the movie, and I wasn't impressed with it. I wasn't really disappointed with it because it was exactly what I expected. And for a movie that you just want to see things blow up and robots running around, it does that. It doesn't do it as well as the third movie. The third Transformers movie, it still had all the story problems and the overblown dialogue that was not necessary. But the last, 40 minutes of Transformers Dark of the Moon was pretty spectacular. You cannot deny that. This does not have that. In fact, the action sequences aren't nearly as good. They're not even nearly as good as the action sequences in Transformers 2, or even the first one. The action isn't as good as the other movies. It still works for that forgettable popcorn action flick. There's parts of it that are better, like Mark Wahlberg instead of Shia LaBeouf. There are parts that aren't as good, like the action overall isn't as good, but it's there. And it's a serviceable film. I don't think it's a terrible movie. And I'm giving it a better rating than most are because it is what it is. And by this point, you know what you're going to get. And I don't hold Michael Bay to that high of a standard if he can at least make something entertaining. But yeah, 2 hours and 40 minutes is a long movie, and it's unnecessarily long. I'm curious. I wonder if that's going to impact it when it comes to the final numbers. Anyways, bottom line, Transformers, Age of Extinction, just barely kind of rocks just to see it for the excitement and the action and for the spectacle. And at least you get your money's worth because you get plenty of movie.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I'm going to talk about is They Came Together. Unfortunately, I ran a little long in the Transformers review. That's what they do. Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd star in a spoof of romantic comedies about a couple who experiences a cute meet and have a whirlwind romance.
So, Joel, Molly, how'd you two meet?
Kind of a corny romantic comedy kind of story.
If you love love stories.
You like fiction books?
I never met anyone else who likes fiction.
That is too funny.
And if you love falling in love. Then you will love this love story.
Hey, you look different.
Really? You think so?
You've got Groucho glasses on.
You noticed.
This is arguably the best movie of the weekend, and sadly, I'm shirking it in terms of time because I talk so much about Transformers. Ultimately, seek this movie out and watch it. It's funny. It's directed by David Wayne, who did Wet Hot American Summer, and it's got a great cast. Most of them are people you'll recognize from TV, you know, Amy Poehler from Parks and Rec, and I mean, Paul Rudd's been doing a lot of things, but you've got Bill Hader and Ellie Kemper, who also are in the movie, and it is a spoof. But it's a loving spoof. And you say spoof nowadays and people immediately think of a haunted house and scary movie and epic movie and the really crappy spoofs. It's not even that. It's not even like Airplane, which was just an absurdist send up. This is more going back to Blazing Saddles territory where you're making fun of the genre, but you love the genre at the same time. And you're goofing on the tropes and the things that happen all the time in the movie. It is made for people who can appreciate a romantic comedy. So there's a lot of people out there who hate romantic comedies. These are not the people making the movie. You can tell they certainly have an appreciation for the genre and how it works and how things go together. It's very cute. It's very funny. Has some very clever scenes. Has some very raunchy scenes. But it's totally worth seeing. They Came Together. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
All right, I have to go. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Cabin Fever Patient Zero with a review and an interview, the box office, and the DVD roundup.
Shake that.
Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr, rolling into the final segment. We are now going to be talking about Cabin Fever, Patient Zero. Let's get this last movie out of the way. A group of friends head to a tropical island for vacation, but things turn into a nightmare when they discover they're at ground zero for an outbreak of flesh-eating bacteria. Don't you hate when that happens?
We are on the verge of a global pandemic.
You're not just a carrier. You're a possible cure.
You can't just keep experimenting on me.
You are patient zero.
Get me out of here.
What happened?
Penny thinks she saw something.
Look at this.
Oh, baby, I told you to put on sunscreen.
I think Penny's sick.
Listen, Penny needs help now.
We gotta get off this island!
I love the first Cabin Fever, directed by Eli Roth, probably arguably one of his best movies. And the sequel was directed by Ty West, although it was just a hired gun type of thing. It wasn't Ty West's best work by far. This is yet another sequel. And you know what? It's on that line of sort of diminishing returns in terms of story and character and new things happening. It does have some interesting things going on, and it is gory and it is icky at times. It works for sort of like a sequel direct video type movie, although it is coming out in limited theaters. Mostly you're going to find it on VOD. It has its moments. It's got its blood. It's got its breasts. There are a couple scenes that could have been done more effectively. And ultimately, Cabin Fever, Patient Zero, decent enough, gory, gooey, yucky film. Not really worth it to see in the theaters, but, you know, might be worth a rental at some point. I'm still going to say that Cabin Fever, Patient Zero kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Okay.
Before we move on, let's hear what Gillian Murray had to say. She plays one of the characters in the movie who gets infected, and of course, horrible things happen to her. Here's what she had to say about it. You really come apart in this movie, don't you?
Oh, man, you're telling me. It's definitely, I think, out of everything I've ever done, probably the most physically I've fallen apart ever. It's a lot of makeup, a lot of prosthetic work, yeah.
So how much of it was makeup? Because you're pretty slender and they did a lot to you.
It's 9 hours of makeup towards the very end when I'm fully sick. I am a small person, so when they added prosthetics and they add so many layers, it actually was making me super, super wide. So I think that's why they use so, it's very dark in the scenes when I'm really, really sick, because my body is like, it's, you know, a few extra inches of prosthetic and blood that's added in to the edges of my whole body. You're glued in everywhere, but you have to be very comfortable with yourself because you stand naked for, you know, that 9 hours while they're gluing it onto your raw body. So my makeup artist got very, very comfortable.
Well, and your wardrobe starts off just as a bikini.
Oh my gosh, the whole movie, I have just a bikini on. I was like, when I first got there, I was like so excited to eat all the food and the DR. And then I looked at my wardrobe and I was like, oh, I guess I'm not going to get to try everything I wanted to eat here.
Did you do your own stunts even under all those prosthetics?
Oh yeah, it's always all you with the prosthetics. Unfortunately, I would love to have a double so I don't have to sit there for 9 hours of makeup. But yeah, it is me and everything. And I always do my own stunts.
So did doing a film like this make you paranoid about germs?
You know what? I've never been one of those people, like a crazy hand washer or anything. I'm not a germaphobe by any means. So it doesn't affect me in that way. Thankfully, I think that if I was scared of germs, I would have been really itchy and freaked out the entire time.
Are you comfortable with the term scream queen?
You know what? That term has been thrown around for a bit now. I guess I'm kind of just used to it. I don't know. I got pegged into horror films back in the day. I think it's just because I can cry easily. Yeah, I don't really know how it happened, but yeah, it seems to be my niche in the industry now.
What's your favorite horror film?
The Exorcist. Really love that movie. That, you know what? It's because it really psychologically messed me up as a kid. And you know what's weird is on the back of my door when I was living with my family, I had the poster of The Exorcist, that crazy picture of her close-up when she was sick, of Linda Blair. And I felt like a movie that can really affect you that much, doesn't matter if it's good or bad, but it can affect you like that, it did its job.
Now, have you seen the other Cabin Fever movies?
Oh, I saw the first one ages ago. I actually own it. And that was one of my favorites back in the day. It was very different, and to me, I felt like it was very possible. Like, it could technically happen.
So what's coming up next? More horror movies?
You know what? I don't think I can avoid them. I think that for some reason, they're just going to be hanging around forever. I would hope, I'd like to put it out in the universe, I really want to do a rom-com. Just like to do a movie that's like a fun family-filled movie that I can take my parents to and my grandma. Because I don't want to really show her Cabin Fever because she might be a little freaked out. I'm pretty open with my mom, but I feel like she might not like Cabin Fever as much. She might be a little too much for the gore.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Thank you, Gillian Murray, for being on the show. It was a lot of fun to interview you. If you want to hear the full interview, you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and check that out. Right now, we're going to be talking about the box office, though. Was I correct? Last week, I said Think Like a Man 2 was going to win with $45 million. I am kind of disappointed that it didn't do as well as I thought it did. But you know what? It did $30 million, which is still perfectly fine. Perfectly fine for that movie. That movie does not have much of a budget. It's made back. It's going to be a hit. Kevin Hart's still the golden child. And he ended up beating 22 Jump Street. And he way beated Jersey Boys, which only had about $13.5 million. All the other smaller movies that I talked about last week are really running way in the distance. But yeah, $30 million for Think Like a Man 2 was a good start for that one. This week, I'm going to go out on the bold prediction that Transformers Age of Extinction is going to make $100 million. It's part of the reason this one's hard to give a one-to-one comparison with its own previous films is most of these movies opened on 4th of July weekend. So we actually had a couple days that opened early. This year, it is opening on Friday. So you're going to get a very traditional Friday, Saturday, Sunday spread. And it's going to be hard to compare these. But I ultimately think even with a $100 million opening, that's not as good as the other movies. Because Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which made the most domestically, started out and it had like a $100 million plus weekend. I mean, there was a Tuesday and Wednesday or Wednesday and Thursday before that where it made an insane amount of money, like $90 million. So it finished its first like 7 days with $200 million. Or first 5 days with $200 million, which is an incredibly insane amount of money. I don't think you're going to get that from this movie. Like many of the films we've seen this summer, including The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Godzilla, I think it's going to have a big opening weekend, but it is not going to have the legs to even make it past $300 million. That's been sort of the glass ceiling this summer, and I don't know if it's going to make it. It'll do well overseas because you've got the expansion of the market and you've got more 3D and you're going to get that 3D bump. But this movie should be making like $150 million its opening weekend if you were really going to compare it to the performance of its predecessors. And I think what's going to impact it is the time. The running time, I think, is a very caustic problem with this one. And I think that's driving the sequel the franchise fatigue in this. That people are like, we've already seen it. There's nothing new. You see the Dinobots, sure, but notice I haven't even talked about those yet. So they're just kind of like a throwaway, and they only show up in the last 15 minutes anyways. It's kind of silly. The whole point being is there's nothing new. It's, you know, we've seen three movies already with robots turning into vehicles. So what's the big deal with this one? What is the draw? And the Dinobots are the big draw, but it really isn't. So that's going to be interesting. I think it may not make $100 million. It may be incredibly front-loaded. This is the kind of movie that is front-loaded, and it's getting more and more front-loaded as we go. We'll see what happens. I would love to see this franchise slow down a bit, simply because it's just been so mishandled by Michael Bay just making the dumbest. I mean, there's maybe about, out of the four movies, there's enough character for maybe half a movie. Anyways, you hear that sound, that means we need to talk about the world-famous DVD Roundup. We have a giveaway before we start the actual DVD Roundup, and it's one of my top picks is Enemy, which stars Jake Gyllenhaal. We talked about this one on the show a couple months ago, and this is a Twilight Zone-esque kind of movie with a very bizarre plot about a guy who finds himself having a doppelganger. He's a teacher, he's a professor, or he teaches math at like a community college, and he discovers that there's an actor running around who is basically his doppelganger. And it's what happens with that. It's very bizarre. It's very different. It's directed by the guy who did Prisoners, although it is not nearly the same kind of movie as Prisoners. We're going to have a giveaway on this DVD. So what you need to do, if you want your own free copy of Enemy, send an email to enemy@fatguysatthemovies.com or fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. Make sure you say Enemy in the subject line, and we will put your name in a hat. And you can win a copy of Enemy. I hope you do that. It's a good movie. Check it out. Other movies in the DVD roundup, we have 300 Rides of an Empire. That is the sequel to 300, which is surprisingly really good and coherent. There's also Star Trek The Next Generation Season 6. There's a movie called Blood Ties, which stars Clive Owen as a criminal who keeps getting pulled back into his criminal past. And Winter's Tale, which wasn't very good. But, I mean, it was ambitious, and it looks beautiful. It's just kind of a dullard of a movie. There is a stinker this week. That would be Duck Dynasty Season 5, because I'm so tired of reality TV and this phony baloney marketing ploy of Duck Dynasty is just annoying. And reality TV is such garbage. It blows my mind that people actually buy DVDs of these things. That is it. We're wrapping up for the week. Next week, we're going to be talking about Tammy, Earth to Echo, and Deliver Us from Evil. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.